Good evening. I'll take just a minute to read this to you. It is from the James Keller column in a Detroit newspaper. Silence can be had for a price in Detroit, Michigan. Those who would like a little quiet instead of music can drop a dime in a jukebox and play a 3-minute record that features neither music nor voices, only silence. The idea was started by 2 University of Detroit students who felt that many of their colleagues would like a little quiet when reading or studying over a milkshake. Their first 2 handmade silence records were played so often in the student union's jukebox that they became noisy and had to be replaced. This unique approach to peace and quiet soon brought inquiries from others in search of silence in all parts of the world. No matter how great an effort it requires, set aside at least a few minutes of silence each day for reading, reflection, and prayer. It is essential for the vigor of your heart, mind, and soul. In all thy ways, think of Him, and He will direct thy steps. Teach me, O Holy Spirit, the secret of withdrawing into myself in order to gain the inner strength needed for my outward actions. Well, that needs no comment. For those of you who are familiar with the teachings of the Infinite Way, because God can be known in no other way than through silence. God cannot be known through thought. God cannot be known through any thinking process. God cannot be known through any process of the mind. God cannot be known through books, regardless of the name or nature of the books, including Scripture. God cannot be known except in and through silence, because God is not known by an activity of our being. God is only known through His revelation of Himself. And God's revelation of Himself can only take place to those who are listening, those who are still, those who are quiet, those who are silent. It is an important point to remember that there is no way to reach God. A way must be prepared for God to reach us. And the only way that that can be done is through inner stillness. I say to you, this to you, not merely because it has been my individual experience, though for me that would be enough. But I say it to you further, because if you search the religious literature of the world, you will find that every mystic, every individual who has ever come face to face with God, everyone who has ever known God, has come to know God only because God revealed Himself. whether God revealed himself to Moses, Elijah, Isaiah, whether God revealed himself to Jesus, to John, to Paul. Yes, there is quite an interesting experience, that of Saul of Tarsus. Here is Saul of Tarsus out on a mission of persecution. Out on a mission, you might call it, of Antichrist. And yet, God reveals himself to Saul of Tarsus to the extent of changing him into Paul. You might wonder that this could come about until you start studying the life of Saul and find that from earliest childhood he was a seeker after God, and that in his seeking he had the help of fine teachers, evidently those who could tell him the value of introspection, the value of inner peace, the value of inner quiet. And so, even though he was on the wrong track, even though he was, you might say, on the wrong side, nevertheless, he had developed this gift of inner awareness, this gift of inner hearing, even while engaged in outer pursuits. And this alone made it possible for God to reveal himself. So you will find that it is very rare, it must be a very rare experience when God reveals himself to a scholar. I don't know that we have any records of that having happened. But if it has, it has been a rare experience, because the scholar is busy with his mind. He's busy learning. And you can't learn God. In quietness and in confidence, you can become aware of God. In meditation, in moments of inner contemplation and peace, you can know God. And so it is that when we have more of the type of meditation that is taught in the infinite way, when we have more of these records of stillness, silence, when we have more time for pondering the things of God, we will have more of God experience. The reading, the studying, the hearing of the Word, these are but instruments that we use to help ourselves attain a sort of plateau where we can rest, reach an inner state of peace where we can rest from thinking and studying and reading and hearing, and open the inner ear to receive God's grace or God's revelation of himself. God reveals himself to the listening consciousness, the attentive consciousness, to those who are keeping their minds stayed on God, to those who are acknowledging Him in all thy ways, to those who are receptive and responsive to an invisible . Perhaps it does call for faith to believe that there is a divine presence within you longing to reveal itself. Longing, not in the sense of human longing, but nevertheless wanting to bring us home to Him. And not through death, but through life eternal, and through the awareness of His presence. That is why it has been said that if we reach out 1% to God, God reaches 99% to us. And I think of it that way, that if we spend 1% of energy in reading, studying, hearing, and then 99% of stillness and silence, we will find God revealing Himself to us within ourselves. Now, the point that I'm making is this. God is closer to you than breathing, nearer than hands and feet. On the way to become conscious of God's presence, the way to become aware of it is in stillness, quietness, confidence, assurance, silence. Then God reveals Himself to us within ourselves. From the beginning of time, man has been presented with opportunities to fulfill himself on earth. There has never been an age when there has been either more or less of opportunity than there is at this minute. There's no such thing as a particular year or a particular country where opportunity is greater or lesser. Opportunity is omnipresent. And this is true 1,000 BC, 1,000 AD, or 2,000 AD, or 3,000, and there never will be a lessening of opportunity for individual fulfillment. Oh, you hear a lot, of course, about, in this country especially, that there is less opportunity today than there was in the earlier days of this nation. But it isn't true. There are just as many opportunities, for opportunities never increase or decrease. They are always the same, at the same level, and that is the level of infinity. It isn't many years ago, you know, that articles were published to the effect that we have a few big automobile companies and the day of the small one is past. There are no more opportunities in the field of automobile. Now comes along one of the small companies and pretty soon will be bigger than the big companies because the big companies got too big. When you get big, you sometimes get fat. Sometimes the head gets that way. That's the opportunity for the little fellow to catch up. And that's what's happened in that particular field. There is no such thing as lack of opportunity, but it isn't always recognized that opportunity only presents itself through problems. That is why so few people can take advantage of opportunities, because there is no way to opportunity except through problems. Every opportunity that presents itself is an opportunity to rise above problems. That's what makes it an opportunity. Right now, every man, woman, and child on the spiritual path is being presented with an opportunity that of a nature that comes but once in many generations. This particular type of opportunity has come many times in the past, but this is one of the real, real great opportunities. And only those on the spiritual path may avail themselves of this particular opportunity. The world is facing problems of a nature and to a degree that has seldom before happened. It isn't only that you have a Russian problem in the papers. And really, when you think of it, it must seem strange that in a presidential year with so many candidates running for that high office, that not one single one of them mentions that problem or what to do about it or what great idea he has to present if he's elected, and how he's going to meet that if you vote for him. Oh, no, no, there's lots of reasons he'll give you for voting for him, but not the one about how he's going to meet the Russian situation. That he hasn't solved yet. You know, there's another problem he never mentions either. He never tells us about our national finances and what he's going to do with them, to save the dollar or to save the bond or to prevent inflation. That subject is sidetracked. We don't have any candidates who have ideas on that, so they don't want to be elected because they have a solution to our economic problems. Oh, there's another problem they forget to mention. Our problem of labor leaders. No, we have no solution for that one either. We have a lot of reasons for voting for Jones Brown Smith, but not because he has a solution to the problem of labor and what to do about their leaders. And so if you were to go down the great problems that face this nation and the world, you would find that none of the candidates running for president are asking you to vote for them because they have a solution to offer. Not one. Now, of course, the reason must be self-evident. There is no human solution to any of those problems. Those problems have reached a stage at which they cannot be humanly solved. And anyone who thinks that he has a bright idea on how to solve them had better patent it right away. Because it isn't on the horizon, and it isn't being presented to the world. And it isn't only in our country, but none of the prime ministers of the European countries have presented any solution on those problems either. Nor has the Russian government presented any solution. So, as far as this world is concerned, we are in an age of insoluble problems, unsolvable problems, problems of such magnitude that they are beyond the mind or brains of even those who seek the highest offices in the world. And of course, to the world outside of the spiritual path, this is a time of fear and trembling. This is a time that shakes men's faith. This is a time when people begin to think and fear and doubt. Why is this our great opportunity? Do we have any problem, any solution to these problems? Not any human solution. When the Master was walking up and down the Holy Lands, he preached a new kingdom, a kingdom that was not of this world. And it was so misunderstood that they really believed he wanted to upset either the Roman government or perhaps the Hebrew church government. There isn't any indication in the literature that is available to us that he ever recruited an army or armed one, or that he ever preached rebellion against authority. The Master did not have a human solution to either the Hebrews' problem of their very bad church government. And in all the history of the history, all the history of the Hebrew church, it was at its worst from about 150 BC to about 200 AD. And yet he had no solution to the subject of its government, nor did he seek to overthrow that government. And there is no record that he sought to overthrow Caesar with armies. My kingdom is not of this world. My peace give I unto thee, not as the world giveth. The Master had a solution for every problem of human existence, whether it was one of sin or disease or death or poverty or erroneous forms of worship. And the solution that he had was the Spirit. Put up thy sword. Put up thy sword. Resist not evil. He taught a recourse to an inner kingdom, an inner power that made men free. Truth. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. 1,000 may fall at your left, 10,000 at your right. Those who do not abide in the word or let the word abide in them will be as a branch that is cut off and withereth, but you will bear fruit richly. If you turn from using the weapons of this world, you render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Of course, you pray for guidance as to who to vote for. You go to the polls on election day and you vote. You find no excuse to stay home. You do that as an obligation of citizenship. But you won't expect that the world's problems are going to be solved that way. The world's problems are going to be solved spiritually. The world's problems are going to be solved without taking up the sword, without rebellion, without revolution, without taking sides. Certainly, as citizens, we will vote for whoever it is that is revealed to us within ourselves as being the highest human form of government. But heaven forbid that we should put the responsibility on any president, governor, senator, or congressman to save the world when we are in a spiritual dynasty where we know that the government is on his shoulders. We have the opportunity to witness our lives so spiritually governed that the discords of this world will not come nigh our dwelling place. We have the opportunity of being so richly and abundantly provided for that we will bear fruit richly, regardless of how many others may wither on the vine. But that opportunity will only come through surmounting our problem. And our problem is the ability to rise above the use of the world's weapons. Our problem is the ability to rise above thinking of human solutions or depending on them or believing that in any way they ultimately solve the world's problems. In our healing ministry, we witness this every day of the week. You have perhaps heard that it is far easier to heal an incurable disease than a curable one. And this, I think, is very apt to be the truth in most of our practice. And the reason is that it is only when it is announced that our diseases are incurable according to material means that, losing all faith in material means, we turn wholeheartedly to the opportunity of solving our problem, the opportunity of rising above our faith in material means, abandoning our faith in material means, and resting wholly in spiritual consciousness. Very easy for a person to do that who has been told that the doctors can't help them and materia medica won't help and surgery won't help. They find it very easy to reach out and place their entire trust in spiritual means because there isn't any other available. So it is that While there is an opportunity for us to be governed by a good administration in the capitals of the world, while there is the possibility of our enjoying good incomes just because times are good and business is good, as long as there is an opportunity to enjoy good health because we are within the age bracket where good health is the most usual thing, we do not find it easy to accept our opportunity of spiritual health, spiritual supply, spiritual government, nor to place our entire hope, confidence, faith, reliance in the spiritual means. But now we are facing a half a dozen human problems, not only in our national life, but in our international life. Any one or two or three of those could tear the foundations out from under our entire civilization. And we have the opportunity, if we are willing to tackle the problem, of putting up that sword, of relinquishing our confidence or faith or hope in any human administrations or human plans or human agreements, and coming right down to our own spiritual basis and asking ourselves, do I have the courage to take advantage of this opportunity to come out from under the law and live by grace? Do I have the courage to declare within myself, I must no longer have faith in man whose breath is in his nostril? I must no longer have faith in princes or potentates or powers, and actually retire within myself for an assurance of an inner grace? Now, there, in two words, is the secret of our harmony. Inner grace. I can't define it for you or analyze it. I can't give you an intellectual discourse on what inner grace is. I can only tell you that it is the answer to every problem, whether it is one of your individual health or one of our nation's or world's collective health, or whether it is one of your individual supply, your family supply, your nation's supply, or the world's supply, the answer to all of it is an inner grace. There is no such thing as peace on earth and goodwill to men by any human means ever discovered, because peace on earth and goodwill to men has been the aim of the human race since long before 2000 BC. And try to think of how many governments have been formed on how many different principles to bring this peace on earth and goodwill among men, and no way has yet been discovered. And yet the Master says there is such a way. There is the way of Christ. Christ is the solution. Not the first coming of Christ, not the second coming of Christ, or the third coming of Christ. Just the coming of Christ to individual consciousness, and the coming of Christ cannot be described or analyzed or dissected. There, too, you'll have to understand that the coming of Christ means an inner grace. And an inner grace means the coming of Christ, And both of these mean nothing more or less than an assurance within. That he that is within you is greater than he that is in the world. And when that assurance comes, you rest in it. You relax in it. In quietness and in confidence, you become a beholder of this inner grace as it goes out as a presence before you to establish you, to open for you one of those mansions in the Father's house. Of course, it has always been true. Peace and prosperity and health are possible. And they have been demonstrated time and time again, but always by the same means. By means of the Christ, by means of enlightenment, by means of spiritual revelation and realization. To know him aright is life eternal. To know him aright is to be so receptive and so responsive that he may reveal himself within, even as a feeling of assurance, as a feeling of an inner peace. Always remembering this, you do not need a power. And that's what's disturbing the world today. It is looking for a power. That's all that it's trying to do. Find a power. And the only powers there are destructive powers. There are no good powers. All powers are destructive. Because all powers can be divided into good and evil. So they must all be destructive. The only thing that is not destructive is resist not evil. My presence, my peace I give unto you. This is not destructive. The Christ, this is not destructive. The Christ raises the dead, heals the sick, feeds the hungry, opens the eyes of the blind, opens the eyes of the deaf. But it isn't a power. Because the Master says, what did hinder you? There are no powers. So it is. Start to think for a moment that you who are on the spiritual path, you are not seeking for a power. You're not looking for a power to overcome the Russians. You're not looking for a power to overcome depressions. And you're not looking for a power to overcome diseases, infections, contagions, epidemics. You are not looking for a power. You are abiding in God. You are resting and relaxing in God. You are not seeking a sword. Not a physical sword or a mental sword. You are not seeking powers. You are not seeking plans. You are relaxing and resting in the assurance of an inner grace that goes before you to prepare places for you, to prepare mansions for you. You are relaxing in the assurance of my peace. The Christ peace doesn't mean overcoming your enemies, except the enemies that are within yourself. And that's what the Christ does. The Christ empties out those enemies which are of our own household. And never believe that your enemies are anywhere else. The enemy is always of your own household, and that means within your own being. And your enemy is always a belief in two powers, a belief in two presences, a belief in two lives, a belief in duality, ignorance. Ignorance, that's our enemy. And the peace that Christ gives is enlightenment. It's not a power over powers. It is an enlightenment. The enlightenment that dispels ignorance. The enlightenment that dispels darkness, doubt, fear. Once you realize individually that you are not seeking a power to heal your diseases, not even the power of God. Once you realize individually within yourself that you're not seeking a power, not even the power of God, to give you supply, that all you are seeking is God's grace. All you are seeking is my peace. You will soon find that without the sword, without taking up battles, that you can do as the Hebrews did under Hezekiah, rest in his word. Rest in his word. And then watch the enemy destroy itself. When you have availed yourself of the opportunity of an inner relaxing from seeking powers. The world is seeking powers and always has. Whether it was the power of the bow and arrow or the tomahawk or the blockbuster. And always it's a bigger and a bigger power. Until the power becomes so big that no one can control it. But the answer doesn't lie in going within to find another power, not even a spiritual power. The answer lies going within and resting in my peace, in thy grace. Thy grace is my sufficiency in all things. Does it mean that? Or should we take out that word all and substitute some things? Should we make an exception of inflation or Russia? Or should we cling to that? Thy grace is my sufficiency in all things. And rest in that grace, for that grace is not something you have to attain, remember. Oh, no. God's grace isn't dependent on your effort. God's grace is only dependent on God. And since God is no respecter of persons, his grace is with you. Where you are, now, the place whereon thou standest, is holy ground. Don't think for a moment that God's grace is dependent on your labors or your worthiness, because God's grace touched the woman taken in adultery and the thief on the cross and all the other sinners that the Master met. God's grace is available the very moment when you realize that God is no respecter of persons and that his grace is closer to you than breathing, nearer than hands and feet now, and it always has been, awaiting your recognition. Release yourself from effort and find his grace. Not search for it, find that it is already there. Oh, you don't search for it. They've been searching for that all the years they were searching for the Holy Grail. You don't search for it. It is already where you are, even as the Holy Grail always turned up to be in the very place where they started out looking for it. Divine grace is within you, and it is not attained by might or by power, only by recognition and acknowledgement, and then resting in it. Not asking for proof, resting in it. Letting it appear in its own way, in its own time, and that it never comes too late. Never. The first step is to realize that every single day of your life, a fresh opportunity is given to you for your salvation. There are no more opportunities when Jesus is on earth than when Jesus is not on earth. His being on earth told you in words what never has passed away and what he predicted never would pass away. His words are right here to remind you that the grace of God is where you are, within you, neither low here nor low there, neither to be found in holy temples nor holy mountains, but within you. And it's to be found there only through your own inner assurance that his words are truth. So every day we have a fresh opportunity. It makes no difference what our mistakes were yesterday. Though your sins were scarlet, they'll be white as snow in this very minute. And if we muff the chance today, we'll start again tomorrow. Remember, we all have 490 chances. At least that, anyhow. So, without being concerned with whether or not we fall from grace today, or tomorrow, or the next day, let us realize that every day is a fresh day of opportunity. And that opportunity means, however, that we will have to rise through the very problems that face us, and that without those problems we would have no occasion to take advantage of the opportunity that's given to us. And so it is that we all face serious problems. They're the problems of our own health and the health of those around us, or of the community, or of the nation, or of the world. We have the problem of supply. We have the problem of world peace. Oh, we have so many problems, and each one of these has with it an opportunity. But each one of these is solved in the same way. We don't need one solution for abundance, and one solution for health, and one solution for Russia. No, the one and same solution will do for all. We go back a few years to the days of Lydia Pinkham and find one remedy for a dozen ills. And this is the one remedy for all of our ills. Put up thy sword. Stop looking for powers. Retire within yourself and be at peace, and realize that my grace is closer to you than breathing and nearer than hands and feet. And it's not dependent on what you do or what you think. It isn't dependent on your right thinking, and it is not at the mercy of your wrong thinking. It is omnipresent in spite of both of these. It awaits only your recognition, your acknowledgement, that where I am, thou art, and where thou art, I am, for we are one, and all that the Father hath is mine. And then the ability to sit in peace, in assurance, in stillness and quietness, without a power, without seeking a power, without desiring a power. For the secret of harmony is none power. Inner assurance of the divine presence. Inner assurance of divine peace, divine grace. An inner assurance that where I am, God is. We are inseparable, indivisible, one. And be assured that with that recognition, God will reveal himself tangibly. God will reveal himself unmistakably, so that you wouldn't have to ask, how do I know whether it's the voice of God or the voice of the devil? You know, because when you're not looking for a power, and when you're not looking for some selfish good, it is the voice of God. And you can always be sure that if you're looking for a power, it's probably your own subconscious talking to you. Or if you're looking for some personal selfish form of good, it may also be your subconscious. But once your whole aim and life and ambition is to know him aright, that all of this world may know the kingdom of God on earth, even as it is in heaven, it'll be the voice of God speaking to you. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, unless you go looking for a weapon. Thank you.